Welcome to Fine is a Four-Letter Word, the podcast that empowers you to say, fuck being fine. Tired of being stuck in a place where you say everything's fine, when it's really not fine at all? You're not alone. I'm your host, Lori Seitz. I've been there too, and so have my guests. Here's a secret. All it takes is a conscious decision to change and then restructure beliefs so your actions take you in the right direction. That's where Fine is a Four-Letter Word comes in. Each week, you'll hear inspiring stories from people who have transformed their lives and businesses, and practical tips and takeaways to move you from spinning in place to forward action so you can create a life of joy. Thanks for tuning in. Let's get started. When you go out to find yourself, the journey can take you places you didn't imagine you'd ever go. Maybe it'll take you to a different town or even a different country. But once you get there, it's possible you'll discover you really need to go somewhere else, kind of like in the book, The Alchemist. Matthew Brackett felt the calling to go into seminary life from an early age, and it seemed to align with the values he was raised with. Growing up as the 10th of 13 children, he was fortunate that his father made enough money to cover the expenses, even if there weren't a lot of luxuries, and to afford a house that had 5 bathrooms. As a child, Matthew was exposed to the core values of generosity and helping others, which was natural in such a large family in a house that also included other people who stayed with the Brackets if they were down on their luck. Service, generosity, helping others, and sacrifice. There was also the vision of the transcendental, the idea that you're a small piece of a bigger picture. Combining all this with Matthew's need to live beyond the small town where he grew up, joining the priesthood seemed a natural next step as it took him all around the world serving thousands of people. First, he studied for 10 years. Then he served as a priest for 20 years, including as a chaplain in the United States Navy and Marine Corps. Everything seemed fine, but fine is a four-letter word. The problem was that while his life's work aligned with his values of generosity and service, he found that he was not serving himself. Ultimately, he decided to take a year off. During that year, he spent 4 months as an inpatient learning about himself before returning to his hometown and living with his dad while working menial jobs and collecting new experiences. Today, he coaches with individuals, couples, companies, and organizations of all sizes whose leaders sometimes don't quite know what to make of a former priest. Is he going to force his beliefs on them? Does his background give him the ability to see different points of view? Does he have the experience? Matthew is now 3 years into his new journey, and once again, he is finding his niche as a small piece of a new, bigger picture. Hey, if like Matthew, you get to where you set out to go and then discover that that's not where you belong, the 5 Easy Ways to Start Living the Sabbatical Life Guide can point you down your next path. Once you read it, you'll discover a counterintuitive approach to making intentional changes in mindset and lifestyle. Learn how to own your feelings and your struggles so you can address them. Find out how to face fears, step out of your comfort zone, and rewire your beliefs. It's only 7 pages, so it won't take you long to get through. It might help you begin to fill the empty spaces in your heart and your life that you didn't see until you took this first step backward to begin your journey forward. When you're ready to say fuck being fine, this guide is the place to start. It's time to be open and honest with yourself so you can make things better. Go to zenrabbit.com right now to download it for free. Now let's go chat with Matthew. He's got such a calming yet inspiring energy. I'm excited for you to hear what he's discovered and what you can learn from him to apply to your own life. Hello and welcome to Fine is a Four-Letter Word. My guest today, Matthew Brackett. Welcome to the show, Matthew.
Thank you, Lori. It's so good to be here with Fine the Four-Letter Word.
Fine is a Four-Letter Word. Yes, and we're going to talk about that.
All right.
But first, what were the values and beliefs that you were raised with that contributed to you becoming who you did as a young adult and then through to today?
Oh, boy. So,
I jump right in with this. It's a hard question.
I'm the 10th of 13 children, small town New England, very faith-based families from a Catholic background. The values and beliefs that really... One is generosity that marked us. I grew up in, as you can see, my parents having so many children. Again, it was a very generous mindset. Not that that's the only indicator, but they were, and my parents were also very giving, not only to their children, but we always had other people living with us at some point, people that were going through hard times. So this whole thing about service, generosity, helping others, even the word sacrifice, you know, giving for others, and that was one value and belief, the importance of that. Another one was, well, to live in with the vision of the transcendental, what I would call, or the eternal, or the bigger picture, as we call it. That, you know, we're not living in a vacuum. The way we live, is there's a bigger story here. And to think about the bigger story. And to remember that. So that'll be another, there's a faith element to that. And just that aspect of the human being that we transcend ourselves.
That we're we're a small part of a bigger picture.
Yes, that, and that we always, the human heart always looks to go beyond itself. And so that's also just, it's an aspect of how we're wired as human beings. So there's an element of faith in there, but there's also an element of just how we're made as human beings. Those two things are the things that come to mind. Now, I think, and I see this in a lot of faith backgrounds, that there can be a lot of, I suppose, the negativity around faith. In other words, fear-based or guilt-based faith in many practices. Yeah, that's what I call lazy religion, because that's sort of like the easiest way to motivate people, but it's not the most effective.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I deal with pastors and preachers, I call it lazy preaching, because that's just the easiest thing to do. And there was a little bit of that. I wouldn't say really from my parents, but from just the surrounding people that we mixed with. And so I think that, you know, duty, obligation, and sort of guilt, it was there. And I've had to work through a lot of things so that didn't have so much power over me.
You bring up an interesting point, and then I want to ask you a question that popped into my head when you said you were 10th of 13 children. But first, the point is that you said that guilt induction part didn't come so much from your parents, but it came from your surroundings. And so the point I wanted to pull out here is that, yeah, parents are not always, they're never the only influence in a child's life or only significant influence. And I think people don't necessarily realize how much outside of parents influences children.
Right. Such a good point, Laurie. And I think if we think of how much time parents spend with their kids nowadays, I mean, well, the kids spend tons of time at school, then extracurricular activities with friends, and then another community or social settings. So yes, there's definitely a lot of influencers other than just parents. I think with everything, with the events in psychology, there's a lot of weight and sort of almost fault or fault finding, finger pointing on parents, which is sure. I mean, they are the first responsible people for the kids, of course, and for helping them navigate other circles. But at the same time, it's like they're putting, I think we have to be careful not to overburden parents with this responsibility as they're trying to figure out parenting.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So the question that popped into my head is, how many bathrooms were in your house?
That's a good question. We had a large house. My dad had a good job, but I'm with so many kids, no luxuries, right? And we all had to pitch in, you know, vacuuming the house. My mother would say, all right, before you go out and play, go vacuum the house, flush all the toilets, and shut off all the lights.
Okay, right.
So I don't know, I would say five, maybe.
Okay, all right. I was kind of anticipating you might say one, and then I was just going to be like, how did that happen? But okay. I don't know why that question came to my head.
That's a good question, though. But yeah, wasn't an issue growing up. That didn't really cross my mind.
Okay.
there would have been one that would have probably been an issue.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And so then as you're growing up, you're seeing all this generosity, giving, sacrifice. How did that influence you? Because we had a call before for this interview, and you were in the seminary for 30 years. How did you make that choice? What influenced you to choose that career?
I think that influence of being wired for generosity, wired for service, wired for self-giving, wired for looking for the good of others and doing something impactful in time and in eternity. You know, again, that transcendental nature of things. And I think that made me, there are two movements, I would say, in making that decision to go to seminary, being ordained a Catholic priest, and being in ministry for 20 years, also serving in the Navy as a chaplain. So I think one was I wanted to do something meaningful, impactful. And the more sacrifice involved, then that was sort of a litmus test for them. That must be the right way. Mm. Not necessarily the proper discernment elements are there. But that was just sort of the way I would wire, the way I thought. So one was being drawn to something and doing something meaningful and impactful. And if it was harder and it required more generosity and more heroism, then it had to be.
Got it.
The other, I suppose, movement was also just getting away from small town New England, getting away from my family setting. Well, nothing against my family, but I was like, and you know what? Maybe I felt I wanted to find myself, and so I want to get out of here and get out of the shadows of all these other people and expectations and do my thing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Not the greatest motivation or reasons to do what I did, but that's what I was at that age.
I don't know that it makes sense to put judgment on it, and you know whether that was the best thing to do. That was the thing, that was the path that you saw to take at the time, and it led you to where you are today. So
that's right. Yes. And we all, as we move through life, we're just trying to make the most of it and make it work. And I'm at a great place in life where I look back on those 30 years with, there were some hard times, right? Very dark times. Well, maybe we'll talk through that. But at this point, with so much gratitude, appreciation, it built me up in so many ways. It's made me who I become. I had to work through a lot of things to get to where I'm at. So at a point in life where I'm ever so thankful and appreciative of all the people, all the experiences, and to where it has brought me today. And that's what I have to do as human beings, is to make, even if whatever, this, you know, we make the decisions we make, and as we work through them and figure them out, that we make them work.
Yeah.
And we make even challenges that come our way and difficulties that we transform them into opportunities for growth. And that we little by little make sense of them.
Yeah.
And make sense. Service.
Okay. So you were in that career, if you will, for 30 years, but you were only 20 years as a priest. Is that right?
Well, it's 10 years of preparation and education. So it is. You're very much immersed in the lifestyle.
Okay.
Of what we would call becoming religious, making vows, and then preparing for what we would call priesthood or religious ministry, formal ministry.
Okay.
So there's 10 years of education and experience that I build up to the,
got it,
to the moment of being receiving ordination as a priest, and then 20 years of active ministry.
And then you left that?
I did, yes. I left 3 years ago. So in 2021, I formally left. Very complex decision. Took me a good number of years to work through a lot of things and to make that decision.
Well, I imagine that is part of where the whole idea of saying everything was fine, but it wasn't fine comes in for you.
Right. Yes. Well, in that role, like many other roles, you have to put off, you know, this facade or this mask, whatever we want to call it, that I got it all together because people expect you to have it.
Right.
Well, we think that people expect, I don't know if people really expect you to have it all together, but we kind of think that because of the position of the role that I have, but I expect people to expect me to have it together. And so I give off there.
I think people do expect their religious leaders, and I would go, I mean, this is completely random, but I would think even more than regular religious leaders, that priests are put on an even higher pedestal.
They are
other religious than like a rabbi or something. Yeah, you felt like you have to now live up to that standard that's been set for you by society and by your community.
Because of the lifestyle, there's a certain aura, a spiritual or a special aura about it, and that people have these expectations. And I don't think that's helpful for priests, and I don't think it's good for the people either. So that's a whole topic for a whole other conversation. The fact is that you're in that, and from a young age, even before being ordained a priest in this religious organization that I was part of, I was given leadership roles from a young age. And so that, again, just puts you under a lot of pressure where you have to show up and perform really well and almost have it all together and almost like disconnect from certain elements of your humanity.
Mm. Talk a little bit more about that.
Unconsciously. In some environments, you know, as society, we've grown a lot in our emotional awareness, social awareness, mental health awareness. I would say back a few decades ago and in certain organizations that I was part of, that was not necessarily understood or taken into account. You know, the emotional side was sort of, you know, repressed that. All that, you know, sexuality, especially when you become a priest, it's kind of like, well, we don't really know what to do with this. Mm-hmm. Even though it's an integral part of who we are as human beings. And so without proper training or formation or education in all of these areas, we kind of like, well, I'm just going to disconnect. Mm. And it happens in so many areas of life. So I'm not trying to bash just one culture or setting. I'm just experiencing through my own life experience.
Yeah,
but exactly. Working in the military, I saw this is very common as well, because there's a great parallel there, because of the military. Again, I'm meant to be strong. I have to, you know, I can't have problems. And yes, a level you unconsciously, you're almost meant to disconnect. No one tells you that. Mm-hmm. And no one expects you to do that. But that's sort of culturally, right. You're in this culture and mentality, which is very, a lot of intangibles, a lot of invisible things, a lot of unconscious things. So people feel like, well, I got to kind of repress these things, disconnect from these things. And so that's, so I did that. And but there's a comfort in that. There's a comfort in doing that for a period of time, because then I like, well, I don't have to deal with uncomfortable things. I don't have to deal with ambiguous things or things that I don't know what to do with them. So I just don't deal with them.
Right. Works so like if you're putting them in this box, you don't have to look at what's in the box.
Right. Yes. And now it works for a while. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like what we would call a defense mechanism or a coping mechanism. But if that becomes the way you live over a long period of time, at some point it's going to send a pretty expensive bill.
When did that bill show up for you, and what did it look like?
It's going to come. Things come back to haunt you, you know. And so, before I answer your question, is, you know, because I use an example, whether I work with priests or seminarians or in the military, I use it a lot as well. Whereas naturally, we put things, whether it be experiences, whether it be emotions or thoughts, there's certain things that we put away in like a little closet or a cupboard, hoping that, because we don't kind of know what to do with it, and so we just hoping it will disappear. Mm-hmm. And some things sit there quietly and don't really bother us. There's other things that when we put them away in darkness, they grow. And they can begin to invisibly take over our life. And as I recall, they begin to have a massive stench. Mm. Okay, which you can never see a stench, but it begins to invade everything. And that's an image I use for that example.
It's a great image.
Things that we put away, and they can begin to become all invasive, even if we can try to pretend that they're not there. Mm-hmm. And I remember in my life, I was, again, really forcing myself to make it look like I had it together. And I know I didn't, but I didn't know what to do with that. And over time, I began to realize that other people were also noticing. But I was also at the same time, other people don't know what to do with it either. They don't know how to say something to you or how to care. And so kind of like no one touches it.
Right. Everything's fine. Everybody pretends everything's fine.
Everything's fine, yes. So I think this came up, that bill that we're talking about, it came up over time. It came in the form of depression. It came in the form of anxiety. It came in the form of an identity crisis. It came in the form of what I would call disordered sexual expressions. which is natural when people are depressed or confused, or that they everything looks it looks for a way out, mm-hmm. right? And even sexuality, you know, whether it be in pornography, whether it be in meaningless relationships, or you know, because we're looking to ease the pain in some way.
Yeah.
And so that's another, that can, for other people, it can happen in other types of substance abuse, and other types of depression has many expressions. And there's also functional depression, you know, which can be humor, which can be very being, you know, workaholic, very active, which can be just act like everything's fine, right? Which can be serving and caring for others. So anyway, there's many expressions. For me, it showed up in very much a deep discontent, a deep darkness inside of my heart and soul. And while I still tried to be a beacon of light for others, which is challenging.
Right.
And then in not a totally integrated, healthy sexuality, and the identity of crisis. So it came up in many ways. And then I didn't have the muscles or the ability to know what to do with it for a number of years. I tried to kind of deal with it, to talk to people. I didn't know how to do that well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't always find understanding.
Yeah.
And also in that role, you're also careful about judgment. You're careful about, you know, anything I say can be used against you. Right. And so you end up also just being very cautious and careful.
Yeah, I was just going to ask. So, you know, somebody who is the person that other people go to for all of these issues that you're talking about, when you have them and you, then where do you go? Right?
Yes.
Like I hear what you're saying about being careful about who you talk to and what you say, because yeah, it's like, where does the doctor go for help when they have a medical issue, or where does the spiritual leader go when they are the one that people come to for spiritual issues?
And sometimes the doctors are the worst. And sometimes, you know, the spiritual leaders are worse than this. But I love being there for others. And I would like to say that I did it very well. I was very successful in many areas of ministry. But there was also a comfort there in that I didn't have to deal with my stuff.
Right. You could help other people dealing with theirs, and then you didn't have to look at yours.
Yes. And then at some point that comes back to bite you.
Right. And so what happened? Like, was there a specific incident, or what was the final straw or thing that pushed you to go, okay, I really can't do this anymore?
Right. So it was a long journey. So I would have to say, from where I was sort of consciously going through a really rough time and I didn't know what to do, till when things finally began to snap or to break. Mm-hmm. I was saying about seven years.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So really what it was, because there's a lot of different aspects to the story, but I was in Rome. I was studying and I was working there. I had a pretty high profile role there. And I was also doing a specialized degree. Part of that specialized degree was personal accompaniment. And in that, we had to do a very deep psychological assessment with a whole battery of tests. And I have to say that was the first time that everything was sort of brought to the surface, right? My history and everything was going and explained to me in a very understanding and holistic way of everything that I was going through right now, why, in the big picture, why this was happening to me, in the seriousness of my situation. I was sort of trying to avoid it. Yeah, I'm going to work through it. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm talking. At that point, I'd already started to talk to a lot of people and figure things out. But this brought the gravity of my situation before.
Yeah.
And like, they're like, all right, we need to do something. So that was very liberating in one way. That's, as we say in some areas, true, we'll say, freeze. He was able, with the help of someone who really cared, to be able to look at the truth of my life. And so it was very liberating. And that was also liberating, and also that I could understand that what I was going through didn't mean I was bad or there was anything wrong with me. But they were symptoms of a lot of other things that needed to be dealt with. And so liberating and very hopeful. So that was the moment where I really intensified the work on myself. And then that led to saying, you know what, I need to take a year off. I checked myself into inpatient care, where I was for 4 months, doing very intense work on myself. And then I went. Part of my sabbatical year was just really going back home. I'd lived overseas for many, many years. So This was going back home, living with my dad. My mother had since passed away. So this year was what I call the year of coming home to myself, rediscovering who Matthew is and working through everything. So I did the inpatient care for 4 months, and then treatment, and then I was at home doing, and it was such a great year in so many ways. I did my coaching training. I was just able, it was about discovering me, who, you know, where did I come from? Going back to my roots, going back to just being Matthew. I took up a job as a waiter, as a driver for like a taxi company. Just, I didn't want people to know my backstory, who I was, what I had done.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun, and it was very grounding. Because a part of me also said, not only am I dwelling on discover myself, but, you know, I work with a lot of people, and I want to know what it means to be a normal person who have to make ends meet.
Yeah.
Because being in the lifestyle that I was in, we could easily become disconnected from the reality of people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Right. Giving advice that was theoretically sound, but not realistically.
Right. And maybe not always understanding of the challenges that people have. So it was such a great experience.
It's interesting that when you were doing the work on coming, what you said, coming home to yourself, you were literally home.
Right.
Like physically and literally home in where you grew up.
I was, yes. And for me, that was important. It was challenging as well, because it's going back to, you know, where I came from, and I hadn't really lived. I had to live there. I'd been away until people had seen me once in a while. Mm-hmm. But I also had, you know, there were a lot of questions, I had a lot of explanations.
Yeah, right. And
because it's an awkward, you know, you were doing this, and now you don't dress like this, you're not doing any of that. Or people didn't even ask about it, but they were, you know, just the normal.
Right, the gossip was,
village.
Yeah, what's going on with Matthew?
Which was upsetting, because I always want people, if they have anything to say to me, I prefer they come and talk to me directly. But again, this culture, almost people don't know how to do that.
Yeah. So you now, because it's in your heart, I believe, continue to serve, but in a different capacity.
Yes, in a different capacity. And now I have to make a living off of it. Before, everything was provided for, but I didn't get paid for my services. So learning to sell services is a whole learning curve. And also just the value of that, and also just learn so much the process. But yes, continuing to serve people. I serve people in what I would call leadership or influential roles, because there's a lot here, but leadership, authority, influence, power, they are all part of the human experience. They have been, and they always will be, whether we like it or not. And so, I've seen authority, leadership, power, you know, used so well so many times. And when used well, it's very life-giving and empowering. But when it's not used well, when it's used in a dysfunctional manner or a toxic manner, unhealthy manner, it's very destructive. Even more so in family and faith contexts, because family and faith, it touches the deeper fibers of the human person. So that's why it's one of the, I'm very much in love with the complex beauty of the human person, and very passionate about this whole topic of leadership. And because of what I said, because it can do so much good, but it can also do so much damage. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are you working with organizations as a whole or with the leaders individually?
I can do both. I do both. And it doesn't, you know, it's not only the corporate world, there's the nonprofit world, there's the religious world, any type of faith-based world, there's political, there's celebrities. Like, every environment has its functionality and dysfunctionality.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And when I talk about leadership, I talk about this holistic approach of how I lead myself, how I lead in my inner circles. So I do some couples work as well. How I lead professionally and how I lead in organizational context. I was fortunate to be, or unfortunately, and I see so fortunate to be part of very complex, global complex organizations. Whether it be the religious order I was part of, whether it be the Catholic Church, whether it be the United States Navy. And now I work with people in very complex global organizations with doing leadership coaching, consulting, and education. So there's that element of knowing how to navigate complex global cultures.
I'm completely ignorant on this, but I'm going to guess that there aren't very many people who have done what you've done in the past and then moved out of it to continue serving in this different capacity. So that gives you a really unique, and I think the word unique is overused a lot of times, but you truly do have a unique perspective on what you're talking about, like the complex communities or complex organizations.
Right. Yes, I would like to think so. I think the corporate America, you know, anyway, there's a lot we could say there, but the corporate America kind of thinks it's the best thing since whatever. You know, and so there's a lot of bias. So corporate America has a hard, or corporate world in general, has a hard time conceptualizing my life experience and seeing how it can bring value. So that's been very interesting to discover. So they look at, because they're like, they just don't know what to make of my past and how that could be valuable. Because like, you don't have corporate experience. But I think there's obviously bias there. There's prejudice or whatever other word you want to use. Unconscious. So I think that they miss out in a certain way, but they're very limited in that. But yes, I think I know people that have done the same thing that I've done as regards the move from professional ministry towards a similar life that I do. And so, yeah, I think we do have a lot to offer.
Isn't the Catholic Church as an organization, it's one of the oldest, and
it's the longest and largest standing global organization ever.
Right. So to me, when I hear you say the corporate world doesn't see how your experience is relevant, it just kind of blows my mind. Like, what are they missing?
Well, yeah, I think it's the sort of this prejudice around faith nowadays, where it's, you know, or if you were in the world of faith, either you're going to come here and you're going to force it upon us, which again is very inaccurate, or if you were in a position like, you know, of leadership in that, I don't know, you read the Bible, you prayed all day, you don't know where to.
Right. You don't have like the business experience.
Right. Right. Or any, anyway, it's more ignorance than anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ignorant and can always limit us.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's so interesting. I'll be interested in watching your journey for how develops, because I just think it's so cool. Not that what you went through, like I'm not, you know, but this transition, to me, I see how much value you could bring to organizations. And so how you evolve in showing them that and then actually doing it, like, you know, showing so they hire you and then doing it to help them evolve their organizations.
Yes. So it is fascinating. So stand by as we go through this.
Yeah. And that's another interesting point to pull out in terms of for people who are listening, is that just because what you're doing doesn't necessarily make sense to the people you're trying to sell it to or share it with, doesn't mean that it's not still a good idea.
Right. Yes. And I think people, and I've come across a lot of people that do find and value in what I do. And people that know me, like they know that, and the credibility I think I have because of my background, I think, especially in the coaching world, it's an added level of credibility. Like, holy smokes, this person has worked with thousands of people across cultures and borders, right? So the intercultural experience, the international experience, and languages, and just working with thousands and thousands of people. Yeah. I think it gives me a huge advantage if we're going to say it that way.
In the market. Absolutely. How many languages do you speak?
Three.
Okay.
So English, Italian, and Spanish.
Gotcha.
So a lot of my services, I offer them as bilingual. So everything that I do is in English and in Spanish.
Uh-huh. Got it. Yeah. Cool. I was thinking of something else and then it just went out of my head, but maybe it'll come back. But because I'm going to first, let me ask you about, and this seems like now given your background, maybe a funny question in my head, but the whole hype song, like, cause again, because people think, oh, like, priests, you know, what are they listening to for, you know, to get a boost of energy? Like, is it some kind of,
Oh, and I remember the hype song was Back in Black, right?
Right. And so this is like so, like, again, it's kind of like blowing my mind or other people, but that's because of the stereotype of like, oh yeah, priests are just very religious. They don't listen to like rock music, you know, but of course you do. You're human.
Right. We do. And there's different levels. I'm not a big AC/DC fan, but I just love that rhythm. There's a few reasons. And I wore black for 30 years.
Right.
And then I'm from Boston, and that's the song that they use when the Boston Bruins, a hockey team in Boston, when they come out on ice, they use Back in Black because they wear black as a uniform. And then I'm a drummer, so I grew up drumming. And so I just love I really like music, and I love different rhythms. Yeah, that's when I saw that on your questionnaire, the first song that popped in, and I said, I'm not going to think about other songs. That was the first time I popped into my mind.
I love it. I love, going with the first thing that comes to mind, because that's the true. That's
I am
the true thing.
Black, even though not literally.
I love it. So perfect. If people want to continue a conversation with you, where is the best place for them to find you?
Find is a four-letter word podcast.
Yes.
Find me here. You find me on my socials. Matthew Brackett Official on a lot of is my handle for a lot of social media. Matthew Brackett on LinkedIn, and then my website, BracketAlliance.com.
Okay.
And my YouTube site as well, where they can find a lot of interviews that I've done, content that I produce.
Excellent. I will put links to all of that in the show notes so people can find it easily and click on it and go straight to you.
Yes, that would be very helpful. I look forward to that. Yes, I'm looking for opportunities to continue to engage, whether it be in interviews, whether it be another podcast, whether it be speaking engagements. So much to share with people. And
yes.
I think, as we've talked about, I have a unique background, which creates a lot of curiosity.
Yeah, exactly. It's curiosity. And we haven't known each other very long. You just, and from that, from this, the time that I have known you, you just bring such a calming energy. Which,
That doesn't mean that I'm putting you to sleep.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's a very calming and grounding energy.
Well, thank you. I think that's just fortunate to all the years of experience that I've been able to have and has helped me to do that. I'm very fortunate, very grateful.
Yeah,
no
doubt.
And I want to bring that to people.
Matthew, thank you so much for joining me today on Fine is a Four-Letter Word.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
When I first spoke with Matthew, I was really curious what inspired him to leave three decades of priesthood. This was such a good conversation of personal growth, resilience, and the complex relationship between identity, faith, and leadership. Here are my key takeaways. Number one, when we dedicate ourselves to helping others, we find that sometimes we're actually trying to help ourselves. In previous episodes, I've spoken with therapists who badly needed the help they provided others and used their service toward others as a means of trying to find their own answers. This is all well and good, but you can find yourself spent and empty in the process, which leads to number two. Who do you turn to when you yourself need help with the very thing you help others with? Matthew was feeling spiritually empty while living in a culture that put him on a pedestal and was afraid of admitting he needed spiritual guidance because it might diminish him in the eyes of those who relied on him. Contrary to common societal belief, this is not a sign of weakness or incompetence. Number three, it's okay to completely start over. Hearing how middle-aged Matthew went back to live with his dad and work as a taxi cab driver was inspiring.
He had the courage to wipe the slate clean. It reminds me of John Kralik's autobiographical story in his book, 365 Thank Yous. It's common to believe doing this makes you a failure or a quitter. But if there's one thing I want you to understand from listening to all my episodes, it's that it's okay to make a complete change. There's no such thing as failure. Number four, sometimes the corporate world can be narrow-minded when it disqualifies candidates based solely on their resumes and cover letters. My producer used to work as a temp recruiter. He had an awesome candidate to place as an office manager who met all the on-paper qualifications. But the employer refused to even see her because 10 years earlier, she had been a nurse, and they were afraid she would just quit and go back to nursing, even though she clearly had moved on from nursing. Take this as a reminder to be more open-minded yourself when meeting new people. And number five, that said, your experience can serve you when you know how to position it. While some companies are wary of Matthew because of his background in religious service, others see that he has 30 years of experience working for the longest continuously operating organization that has ever existed, and that quote-unquote job brought him into contact with a wide range of cultures and experiences, giving him a unique edge as a coach. Somebody will appreciate you. Just be courageous enough not to settle for a bad fit. Thanks for listening to Fine is a Four-Letter Word. If you've enjoyed the show, please follow and share it with a friend. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform to help others discover it too. You can find links to my socials on my website, zenrabbit.com. And before you go, take a moment to reflect on what you're grateful for today. Remember, you have the power to create a life you love, and I'm proud of you. Thanks for joining me. Take care.